First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
COVID cases fill up local hospitals once again as Mayor Curry begs for people to get vaccinated. Gambling casinos could soon be coming to town, and Jacksonville gets named as one of the best places to live in the U.S. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5 and live on our video stream, too, for First Coast Connect this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, all of the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. Give us a call now. Already getting your calls. 549-2937 to join us. Then later, the Jacksonville Music Experience has some summer listening for you as we connect you to the beautiful noise of Northeast Florida and the most talented bands and musicians in town. First, though, it's Friday, and here to discuss yet another busy week in the news, we welcome Dan Scanlon of the Florida Times Union. Hey, Dan.
Hey, good morning.
Good to have you on the show. Radio host Angela Spears with us. Hi, Angela.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning. Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal. Hey, Tim.
It's good to be here.
And rounding out our panel, Sydney Bowles of WJCT News. Sydney, good morning to you.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Happy to have you all. Again, we're live on video, live on the stream at wjct.org/listen. And we are also live this Friday on video stream. You can catch us on YouTube and Facebook. Lots to talk about this week, and we'll go to your calls in a moment. Again, it's 549-2937. Let's begin with our top story this Friday. Not good news to tell you that the CDC now considers Jacksonville and surrounding counties to be a hotspot for COVID. Case counts are skyrocketing in the area. ERs are filling up. Some hospitals are now starting to cancel some elective surgeries to deal with this crisis. This week, Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry urged people to get vaccinated as the highly contagious Delta variant of the virus spreads. Virtually everyone coming into hospitals right now seriously ill with COVID has not been vaccinated. WJCT News has also learned local hospitals are working together as a block to pursue a federal grant so they can wage a full-scale campaign to urge people here on the First Coast to get the vaccine. Give us a call as we talk about this. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Dan Scanlon, let's begin with you. We heard from Chad Nielsen of U of Health Jacksonville Wednesday on this program that his hospital's COVID ward is seeing a 10 to 15% rise in admissions every day. The unvaccinated are the people showing up, and if you're going to the hospital with COVID, it's because you are so sick you can't breathe. You have to get oxygen. That is why they are going in now. And it's mainly younger people, Dan. Most senior citizens around town have been vaccinated. So it's people under the age of 50 that the mayor and others are begging to be vaccinated. You know, we talk about it on this program every day, Dan. It's so frustrating to see the vaccine so readily available and people still refusing to get the shot, which could get us out of this crisis.
Well, remember when we talked about this ad nauseum a year ago in the height of the pandemic, that the younger folks, and I say younger because I'm in my mid-60s, were saying they didn't think they needed to worry about masks and social distancing because they felt that they weren't going to get it. And so now we're seeing possibly that same mindset, that they don't think they need it, especially since everybody else they think has got the vaccination. They're safe. I never see any masks anywhere, and yet I do wear them, and I've had my vaccinations. And a buddy of mine who's a New York City doctor has been telling it like it is for the past year and a half, posted something this week that a third of the new cases are in five states, Florida, Louisiana, Arkansas, Missouri, and Nevada. And everybody who's in the hospital across the country, most of them have not had vaccinations. You'd think you'd see the writing on the wall.
Right. Here's Chad Nielsen from UF Health Jacksonville speaking on this program Wednesday about low vaccination rates in Duval and surrounding counties.
Our hospital at the north side of town near the airport is filled with patients from Northeast Florida, particularly around the Georgia-Florida line, because these are low vaccine counties and they're just pouring into our hospitals.
Angela Spears, you know, it's just awful to hear this. Let's say this once again. The vaccine is safe. It's effective. It will prevent hospitalization and death. You might still get a mild case of COVID after getting the vaccine, but it will protect you against a serious bout with the disease. And Angela, it is not interfering with women's fertility. I don't know how many times we have to say this because we've heard this over and over again, that women, younger women, are afraid to get the vaccine because they think it might prevent them from getting pregnant someday. There's so much misinformation out there that it's literally killing people, Angela.
Yes, Melissa, and I've heard that as well from so many people. I've heard everything from excuses of even young people saying, well, I don't know how it's going to affect me in the future, right? They don't know that. I've heard other people, it's still that misconception of, you know, oh, what about the Tuskegee experiment? I've had someone tell me that. And some people are just like, oh, well, I don't know where to go. There's excuse after excuse after excuse. And it's plain and simple, Melissa. We need to get vaccinated so we can get on the other side of this. And it's not 100%, we know that, right? Nothing is 100% in life, right? So, but it lessens, as you mentioned, it lessens the chances of you getting as sick as you could be. And so we've got to talk with people. When I talk with people about this, and I'm like, look, let's follow the science. And, you know, some people say, oh, well, I don't believe in that. You take your science and I'm not going to believe in that. Okay, well then find a doctor, find someone credible who you trust and ask that person, what's the efficacy rate? How will this help me? And I just think we have to continue, Melissa, if it's going to take one by one with each of us talking to our friends and then passing it on to others so we can dispel the misinformation that we see out there and saying, hey, it's safe. And you need leaders. We're seeing our leaders come out and they've been saying it. Hey, it's safe. Take it. Take it. As soon as I had the opportunity, Melissa, I was right there in line getting that vaccination.
Yeah,
right?
Me too.
I was worried about him because, you know, he's a kidney transplant recipient, diabetes, high blood pressure, you name it, right? He has it type of thing. And when it first came out, I said, you know, I don't know if there's someone like you who can take it, right? And he said, well, I don't care. I'm going to take it. I'm going to be the first one. I'll volunteer. So it was that attitude, and he definitely took it, right? So we have to continue to educate ourselves. We have to continue to educate others, Melissa, because the vaccine is safe, and we need to get on the other side of it. And, you know, there are vaccines, right, that your children have to take. I remember when I went off to college at the University of Texas, before I could go, they made me get the measles shot, right? If they said I could get my measles vaccination, I couldn't show up at UT in Austin. And you know what I did? I got that measles vaccination so that I could be on campus.
That's right. It's 549-2937. Share your thoughts about the vaccination campaign the mayor and local hospitals are leading. 549-2937. Here's a tweet from the mayor yesterday. He says on Twitter, I spoke with local hospital CEOs to discuss the recent increase in COVID cases. They reaffirmed what I posted earlier this week. Nearly all those with serious side effects were not vaccinated. Once again, I am asking the people of Jacksonville to get the vaccine. Science is proving that it can save your life. The Delta variant is extremely contagious. Protect yourself and your family. Get vaccinated, says the mayor. Tim Gibbons, unfortunately, there's a long history of vaccine skepticism in this country. This isn't the first time we've been through this. And in fact, as I was researching yesterday, new vaccines that have been introduced over this country's history have also fallen prey to people thinking they could affect fertility, that they could do, they could have other unforeseen effects. This isn't new, in other words.
It's not new, and people obviously do get concerned. It's most of us are not vaccine experts, so it's not like we understand the deep science behind it, which is why we turn to the people who do understand the deep science behind it. You know, at this point, all the testing has been done, and frankly, a lot of people have been vaccinated, and you can see the real life, you know, there are not reports of people keeling over sort of thing. So even if the initial test did not quell people's skepticism, the widespread nature of the vaccine should now. I was talking to a friend the other day who basically made the point of, you know, the way that the Delta variants are spreading, everybody's going to get either the disease or the vaccine. So even if you don't have 100% trust in the vaccine, you shouldn't have any trust in the virus in the wild. So if you have a choice between the vaccine or the virus, the vaccine is clearly the better case.
Yeah.
I don't know if that argument, you know, convinces anybody, but I don't know.
I know. But, you know, Sydney Bowles, as I mentioned, we learned from UF Health this week that local hospitals are now working as a team. They're working as a coalition. They will seek federal grant funding for a campaign on vaccinations in the area. The city may join in on this. I think this shows folks how serious a public health threat the pandemic still is. People who think, you know, Sydney, that it's all over with, it's not.
It sure is not over. You know, it's good to see that the hospitals are working together. There's definitely strength in numbers when it comes to that kind of thing, and strength in unified messaging around this. I also feel like, you know, it speaks to the way that I've been thinking about vaccination, which is that it is helpful in preventing an individual from getting really sick, but it's also helpful in preventing all of us collectively from being vulnerable. I think we live in a society that very often tells us, it's you against the world, but the truth is we're all really connected, and getting mm-hmm. vaccinated is one of the most important things we can do to take care of one another.
That is such an important point, and I'm so glad you made it. When you vaccinate, you're protecting yourself, your loved ones, and everyone you come into contact with. It's a public service you're performing for the community, in addition to protecting yourself. 549-2937. Give us a call. Let's go to Gabe in Jacksonville. Hi, Gabe. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Go ahead.
So I've just been listening to y'all's comments about the vaccines and everything like that. And, I just wanted to add my two cents to that. And essentially, you know, one, anything that gets pushed to the FDA in roughly 9 months, I don't know if I necessarily trust that at a large scale. You see, you know, in other states such as Boston and other places where there's, you know, these rare instances of side effects and reactions that people weren't expecting, and how potentially statistically that it's in itself could be more dangerous than any variant of the virus, especially for a younger person. With all that being said, you know,
Gabe, that's not true. You are more at risk from the virus than you are from the vaccine. You are more at risk from the virus than you are from the vaccine. Please
get
the facts.
Both of them were developed in a lab, seemingly, and I think the way.
Okay, that's more misinformation. Okay, the technology that developed the spike protein that has made these vaccines effective had been in the works for decades. It had been researched thoroughly, gone through the peer review and clinical trial process. It was not unprecedented in terms of the level of research and time spent on developing this life-saving technology, even though it might appear that way to the public, because Operation Warp Speed did move quickly to get this product to market. But that said, the technology behind this had been researched for quite some time. So it wasn't as though they just 9 months ago or a year ago out of the blue started researching how to vaccinate all of us. Do you understand?
No, the RNA vaccines are not, you know, the standard typical one that you see.
I know, what I'm saying is that they had been developing this technology, the spike protein, that is effective in protecting us for a long time. It wasn't as though they came up with this overnight. That's what I'm trying to explain.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I don't say they didn't. I agree that it was pushed to the FDA very exceptionally quickly due to the circumstance of COVID. But COVID in the first place is so contagious because of the variants within it, like the way it spreads. It doesn't evolve like that naturally in the world. You don't see it like that. You don't see anything that evolves this quickly, this widespread, at this rate. And especially, I mean, and you know, you
okay. All right, Gabe, look, I feel like, I don't know how old you are. I don't know whether you've been vaccinated. Here's what I'm going to say to you and every young person out there listening. There are lots of young people coming into hospitals right now needing oxygen. They're on oxygen. Okay. I don't know what else I can say to you. to explain to you that you are at risk and you need to get vaccinated. And I would urge you to research this some more, not on Facebook, which is a font of misinformation, but from credible sources. Okay? Thank you, Gabe. Joey in St. Augustine. Hi, Joey. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you doing?
Go ahead. Yeah, great.
Yes, I just listening to the vaccination and the last caller, too. I mean, that shows a lot of why I'm calling. I'm a gentleman at my office passed away about a month ago. He was a very good man, you know, and if you look at him as a person and what he was doing, taking care of his granddaughter, his daughter has an addiction issue, and it just, there's so many things that a person can do in this world, and when they're taken away, that reaction and all those consequences kind of come to the forefront, and you realize how important each person is. And we've had this civil war of ideals in our office about vaccination versus no vaccination, and a lot of the arguments were the exact same things I was hearing from Gabe. And after, you know, after the gentleman died, it really put things in perspective, and it made people realize that, hey, you know, hey, even if I'm anti-vaccine at first because I was fed misinformation, that's not my fault. But I can humble myself now that the information is out there and say, I was wrong, and let me get this vaccination for myself and for my community and for everyone around us. You know, it's hard to defeat ignorance in debate. I don't know who said that, but it's a really true example with how the last caller didn't really understand, and it was just using talking points from Fox News and Facebook and whatnot. So I just wanted to share.
Yeah, thank you, Joey.
Real, it's serious, and you know.
Yeah,
we have a gentleman that's gone because of it.
I know it, and I know people who have been sick with it, including younger people. You know, and you're not as I said, you're not going into the hospital unless you cannot breathe. Imagine just not being able to breathe and needing to be hooked up to an oxygen machine. Okay. That is what this virus does, and it does not discriminate. Younger people are now the ones getting sick. So particularly we want to speak to younger people today. Carolina in on the South Side. Carolina, go ahead.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for this program. I so appreciate you, and thank you for my call. I just wanted to comment that as a local pediatrician, I think it's very sad and disheartening to see that parents are making choices for themselves, and yet at the same time, they can bring home the diseases, this COVID, because it's usually the parents that come home with the illness, spread it to the entire family, and put their children at risk. I mean, do we have to start losing our firstborn to actually start paying attention to what's going on? This is a conversation that is so common. And my question to people that say, well, I don't trust the vaccine because I heard this. Well, are those people that are spreading this cruel misinformation because it's putting people's lives at risk, are they available to you when your child is sick or when you're sick? Can you call them at 3 a.m, or do you call your doctor? And if you put it into the perspective of those people that you trust, the people that you go to when you really are ill and you are in need, you can never call those people personally. So it's this ether out there that is the cruelty of the internet misinformation that I think has to, at some point, we have to wake up and see that this is just a cruel death sentence that people are going for.
Right. I mean, I can't thank you enough for sharing that as a pediatrician. I want to thank you for your call. Thank you so much. That reminds me of a story we've told here on the show a bunch of times. Our producer, Heather Schatz, her son, Kyle, was in virtual school. His parents were keeping him at home, protecting him and his sister all through the pandemic. He somehow still got COVID. He got long COVID. This is a kid who's 11 years old and was sick for months and months. Dan Scanlon, you know, it's a myth that kids can't get it. It's a myth that if you're young, you won't get it or you won't get seriously ill. And so before we move on to the next topic, you know, I don't know what else we can say to people to convince them that the best protection they can avail themselves of is this free vaccine that is available on every corner, you know?
Well, as I just tweeted to you, I have a friend who had it. He didn't know he had it. He was asymptomatic, but months later, he still doesn't have a sense of smell. Can you envision going through life without being able to smell your dinner or smell the flowers around you? And I also have two friends who, for whatever reasons of their own, refuse to get the vaccinations. And I just don't understand why. They're wonderful, healthy adults, and why not stay that way?
Exactly right. Let me go through this once again, and then we'll move on. Myths and facts around the COVID vaccine. The myth that a caller called in about earlier is that the approval for the vaccine was too rushed and that it is not safe. That is a myth. The FDA has designated the vaccines as safe and highly effective. Other countries have also found the vaccine safe and effective. Now, there are several products out there. If you're concerned, say, about the Johnson & Johnson product, which has had a few more adverse reporting events than the other types of vaccines, then don't get it. Get the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccine. The vaccine doesn't contain any microchips. It will not cause you to be magnetic. It will not alter your DNA. It will not affect your fertility or make you sterile. If you've had COVID and you've recovered, you still should get the vaccine because the vaccine will provide longer lasting immunity. Okay. So these are the facts, folks. Please go get vaccinated. And I'm talking in particular to younger adults. Go to Walmart, go to Publix, go to CVS, go to Walgreens, go to Harvey's. You don't need an appointment. Walk in and get the vaccine. It will take you a half hour at most and you will be protected. And what I'm saying to you is you think you won't get the vaccine because you're young and or won't get the disease because you're young and healthy. When I was 25 years old, I'm sure I would have felt the same way. I felt invincible. I didn't think anything could ever harm me. That's how young people think. But what I am saying to you is that it can make you very, very sick. So please do your research, talk to your family doctor if you have questions, and get vaccinated, okay? All right, it's 549-2937 as we talk about the top stories of the week with Dan Scanlon, Angela Spears, Tim Gibbons, and Sydney Bowles, a panel of local journalists who have been covering another big story this week. Mayor Lenny Curry is going on the record in favor of bringing a Las Vegas Sands casino operation to Jacksonville. The Sands also contributed $17 million to a political war chest for a Florida constitutional amendment push that would bring casino gambling to North Florida. What do you think about this, Jacksonville? Should we have a casino come to town? 549-2937. Give us a call. Let's go to our business editor, Tim Gibbons. This could bring a lot of money into the community, but of course, we know, Tim, casino gambling will have a lot of opponents too.
It absolutely will. I mean, you go back and you look at the various gaming establishments that have been in town, the internet cafes and things, and moves that were made to shut those down. And you have people in a fairly conservative part of the state who are just opposed to the idea. But it would be a radical economic boost if it happened. Clearly, this is very much the early stages. You know, point of the process we're talking about is getting an initiative on the ballot. So you know, you have to go through that process. You have to have the vote. You have to have everything. So we're talking some amount of time away, but it is part of that general sense of momentum that I think is happening with economic development in the city, where you have plans that might not come to fruition. I have to caveat that. I've been in Jacksonville long enough, and I've seen many, many renderings that have not, you know,
We seen the renderings come and go?
Renderings are a lot cheaper than groundbreaking, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. I've made this joke so many times. When it comes to these developments, the only people that really do well in the end are the design and architectural firms that are always busy making renderings. They've made a lot of them. They get paid. So, Angela Spears, what about these two proposed ballot initiatives that would basically put a constitutional amendment before all of us, the voters? We could vote in casino gambling to this area. This could be on next year's ballot.
This will be interesting, Melissa, because like you said, we have both sides to this. We always talk about how we want Jacksonville to be a destination, that we want something big to come to our area. Will this be it? Will we be the site? Will we be the place that people will come to Jacksonville to spend money to gamble? But then at the same time, do we want that atmosphere? So it'll be interesting to see what people want. I talk with people on both sides. Some people want that because they want something. As Tim mentioned, we want something here, right? We want something downtown. We want something in our area for people to come. And especially if it's a Las Vegas style, you know, are we going to become the next Las Vegas? Melissa, no, I don't think so. Huh. But it will be interesting to see if this is it and if this is what's going to bring people to our area. Because, you know, we need something big. You know, what do we have that people come here?
It would certainly bring people into town. Dan Scanlon, Duval and Clay counties already have some legal gambling. There's Best Bet in the Regency area and Orange Park. They offer poker, simulcast, card games. Dog parks are being phased out, of course, around the state. But what about the other side of this? Anti-gambling activists always say that when you open the door to widespread casino gambling, that it's that a community pays too high a price.
Well, has anyone asked the area sheriffs or our police chiefs at the beaches what they think about this? Because empirically, data I don't have, but when you have a casino, you tend to have other problems nearby. You have homelessness, I believe. You have overspending. You have some vice. You have theft issues, I'm sure, and everything else. So I'm sure that's a big concern right there. That said, obviously, the idea of maybe somewhere in Shotgun's beautiful plans for around Lot J to have a beautiful casino with a hotel and a restaurant would certainly bring in money and certainly give us at least a little star in the crown of Jacksonville. But again, Las Vegas, I'm sure there's times those police officials there wish they didn't have gambling there.
Right. Sydney Bowles, you know, there is this political action committee, Florida Voters in Charge. It's a Jacksonville Beach address, and they have drafted two proposed constitutional amendments to allow casino gambling in North Florida. And, you know, part of the reason for this is that we're not too close to the Seminole tribe and their gambling locations. Our location in the state is part of the advantage, apparently, that Jacksonville might have in this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my perception, my understanding is that we're at about 1,000 major casinos nationwide, and there's a conversation happening about what the saturation point is for those kinds of casinos. How far do people want to travel? If you're going to Las Vegas, you might go from a ways, but if you're coming to Jacksonville, you know, maybe you're coming from Central Florida, maybe you're coming from Alabama, South Carolina. Is that enough foot traffic to sustain that kind of thing? I'm sure I don't know, but those are some of the conversations. And it's true that in that relatively saturated market of 1,000-ish casinos nationwide, there's a pretty big circle around Jacksonville without anything of that size. So, you know, maybe it's an argument for it.
Let us know your thoughts on the push to bring casino gambling to town. It's 549-2937. Give us a call. Betsy in Riverside. Hi, Betsy. Good morning.
Hi, Melissa. This is Betsy, and I am against Lenny Curry bringing more gambling and more people to our area because I don't trust him to begin with, and I think he's probably lining his pockets. And
No proof of that. But why are you against it overall, Betsy?
Well, I think we have enough fun gambling, as you just talked about, in our area, and I just am against bringing more people to our area because I think we're full. There is a new billboard in St. Johns County. 904 is full. Go home. And I agree with it. We're running out of space. We're running out of water. We have no place to put our trash. And he's spending $40,000 on ads to bring more people to Jacksonville. And you can't find a place to park when you go to the beach.
So you think we're full. You don't want the city to get any bigger.
It's going to get bigger. We have 1,000 new residents a day moving to the state of
Gambling
Florida.
Or not, they're coming. That's right.
They're coming, and that doesn't count all the newborns that are going to grow up here in our state. And so that means that in 3 years, we have 1 million more people. And where are we going to put them? We're cutting down all the forest in St. John's County to put up housing developments. And at some point, we're going to have a reckoning with all of this. So
Betsy,
thank you so much.
Thanks for your thoughts, Betsy. Lots of calls on this. Let us know your opinion on casino gambling, a push to bring it to town. 549-2937. Mark on the West Side. Hi, Mark. What are your thoughts?
Good morning. You know, I hear people say we need to make Jacksonville a destination city all the time. And I've lived in two destination cities, right in touristy areas, Charleston and Orlando. And I think if people lived in a destination city for any length of time, they wouldn't want to be in a destination city. It kind of sounds good when you're talking about it, you know, bring more people. They come and they go and they don't move here and they don't live here for the most part. But it's a hassle. And you know that whatever casino will come to town, they'll want some taxpayers' incentives. And whenever I think about new casinos, I always think of two words, Atlantic City. I mean, look what it did to them or for them, in air quotes. I just don't see anything good. I mean, you know, it's not good. So we should consider on mass transit and getting a bigger, better Skyway Express going, I think.
Thank you, Mark. Of course, the voters like you will have their ultimate say. If it goes on the ballot, Cynthia emails the show. Look at what happened when they expanded gambling in Ohio. They had to pay a lot more money to treat addiction, and there was fallout. Okay, Tim Gibbons, it's interesting to hear callers say that they feel that this would make the city more of a destination point on the map, which they don't want.
It's fascinating, and it is why I listen to your show when I'm not on it, because the callers are such a diverse group of people. Those points are interesting. Most of the callers that we've heard from so far who are opposed to this do not seem opposed to casinos so much as opposed to growth. And that's a fascinating conversation that the First Coast has to have with itself of, do we want to be, as the one caller said, a destination city? Do we want more people? And obviously the callers who just spoke, they probably don't want they don't want the Four Seasons. They don't want the riverfront development. They don't want the things that Jacksonville is actually going full speed toward that for many people is what the city does need to grow. And I think that broader conversation will obviously play in the casino question, but how Jacksonville should grow and to what extent it should grow is really the meta conversation that has to take place.
Sure.
One quick side note on the crime things. Those statistics are kind of more mixed than I think people think. Obviously, problem addiction is an issue when you have casinos, but crime isn't actually shown to grow up around casinos in general.
Dan Scanlon, you cover crime and law enforcement for the Times Union. You've been reporting the homicide rate in the city is finally ticking down. Good news. But how would crime rates overall interact with gambling in this city? You've been looking at that too.
Well, I just found a Department of Justice study, and I can't find the date on it, but it says what the researchers found was the percentage of problem or pathological gamblers among the arrestees that were looked at in major cities was 3 to 5 times higher than the general population. And nearly 1/3 of arrestees identified as pathological gamblers admitted having committed robbery in the previous year. Excuse me, approximately 13% had assaulted someone for money. Pathological gamblers were much more likely to have sold drugs than other arrestees. And this is a Department of Justice survey that was done with some fairly interesting names attached to it.
Thanks for that. Stephanie in Jacksonville.
Right there
you go. Stephanie, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to kind of comment on the potential casino. I think that as long as Jacksonville recognizes the potential associations and designs and mitigates those, that overall it would be a net benefit to our area. It would create some jobs. We do have, parts of Jacksonville that are kind of old and crumbling infrastructures that you know, we could really use a revamping of the city. I disagree with the caller before. I've lived in Orlando and Miami as well, which are both destination cities. And I think that anything that grows this city and increases our culture is going to increase our overall wealth in the area, and that we could use, you know, the money and taxes to kind of bolster programs that otherwise wouldn't receive funding.
Thank you for that, Stephanie. Angela Spears, it certainly will bring some jobs to town. It will bring more people into town who will spend money in wherever they would site the casino. So certainly that's the economic development argument. Angela.
And you have to look at, Melissa, all sides of it, right? I just had someone who's listening to your show, Melissa, right now, listening to us, texting me and say, you know, let's focus on arts and culture and make it more of a Broadway thing. Either way it goes, right? Having the casino, Broadway, whatever it is, we have to look at that economic development. And it's interesting, you know, that you do have a diverse audience as far as those who are for it, those who are against it. And it's, you know, and I think Tim is right. We've got to have a conversation. Do we want to grow? You know, a few years ago, you know, in Clay County, that question was asked for some people. And some were saying, hey, you know what? We want to stay a small town. We like the small town feel. You know, here in Jacksonville, do we want that? Right? We always say, many people I know say, we want to be this big city. We want to grow. But then I have some people say, you know what? We're a small, big little town. Right? So we really have to look at that. And we have to look at the economic development, Melissa, because that's important. We want jobs to come here. We people need jobs, and we need to see how we're going to grow. And having that casino possibly could do it. Or if we don't want a casino, let's look at something else to make us that destination city.
Let's take one more call. Vicki in Palm Coast. Hi, Vicki. Thanks for calling.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
I remember when there were casinos started in Council Bluffs, Iowa, and as well as in Tunica. Initially, the area is, of course, low in jobs.
Yeah, well, you're cutting out, Vicki. I couldn't get the rest of what she said. Vicki, you still there? No, we lost her. Vicki, I appreciate the call. You're a little bit down the road from us, but I know you wanted to share about something with a casino in Iowa. We'll look into what happened in Council Bluffs. Okay, it's our Friday Media Roundtable with Dan Scanlon, Angela Spears, Tim Gibbons, and Sydney Bowles as we talk about the biggest stories of the week. Give us a call as we talk about the Cuban protests that happened around the state, 549-2937. We saw protests all over Florida, including here in Jacksonville. There is a vibrant Cuban-American diaspora all the way up here. The demonstrators were calling for an end to the communist dictatorship on the island nation and for better economic conditions. Cubans are in dire straits, particularly in the pandemic. Governor Ron DeSantis and Senator Marco Rubio praised the pro-Cuban protesters here in Florida. Some of them in South Florida did block traffic. But here's the rub. According to Governor DeSantis's new anti-protest law, it's illegal to block traffic when you protest. The law even allows drivers to run protesters over with their cars and face no repercussions. A coalition of groups around the state, including the Northside Coalition of Jacksonville, filed a preliminary injunction this week in federal court to block key portions of the law, saying that it has a chilling effect on protected speech, violates equal protection and due process rights, and is being selectively enforced. They are pointing in particular, Sydney Bowles, to the difference in the way Florida's leaders greeted the Cuban protesters as opposed to how they reacted to last summer's Black Lives Matter protests after the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis. So the question is, can the law, Sydney, withstand a constitutional challenge in court, and is it selective enforcement?
Oh, gosh. I mean, that's going to be something that the courts are going to have to figure out. I mean, I think that the critique of this law has always been that its vagueness is what makes it dangerous, that it contains within it the ability to be applied against people who are protesting peacefully in the vicinity of people who are using more violent protests. It's definitely something that we're going to have to watch in the courts. I think, you know, there's a good chance that this kind of law, I think it's going to be a a court case to watch for sure.
Yeah. Dan Scanlon, Chief U.S. District Judge Mark Walker, ordered mediation in the case to be completed by about Thanksgiving. The state is seeking an outright dismissal, which is probably unlikely. It's one of a number of moves Governor DeSantis has made, passing measures that have been challenged immediately by critics who say they're just unconstitutional and too extreme.
Well, don't forget that Jacksonville had a protest this week as well, and they went from Atlantic Boulevard onto I-95, and there were no arrests there. Compare that to a year ago when there were multiple arrests made during one of the BLM protests downtown because people were blocking the Main Street Bridge, and I was right there and watched those people get arrested, and then summarily most of those arrests got tossed out. So I don't know. Selective enforcement seems to be the concern of the Northside Coalition and others who have filed this. The Cuban voting bloc is a big bloc in the state of Florida, so that could be an impact on how this thing goes through the courts.
That's right. You know, Angela Spears, Cuban Americans in Florida do have a lot of political muscle. So their interests, their point of view, their politics are colliding in a sense with this other coalition of groups who have very different reasons for protesting. But all of these groups are saying they want freedom. That's what unites them, that they want freedom to express themselves.
Exactly, Melissa. That's what they want. But it has to be fair, right? I just think it has to be fair on all sides when it comes to that. If you're going to enforce it for one group, then we have to enforce it for everyone. And, you know, it needs to be looked at, the law itself that the governor put in place. Is this something that needs to be, right? Is that, you know, should we be arresting people for blocking traffic or whatever they're doing? If it's a peaceful protest. So looking at that, but just, I think, Melissa, it just needs to be fair on all sides. Even if there is a large voting bloc, even if the Cuban Americans are large voting bloc, yes, they have a right to protest. And I want everybody has the right to protest, right? Mm-hmm. As long as it's a peaceful protest, but it has to be fair for going to enforce the law.
Tim Gibbons, you know, as I mentioned, this is one of a number of moves the governor has made that political observers think is more performative than anything and designed to position him for a presidential run. Is that your take?
Well, I mean, I think that politicians are going to politic. There is clearly, and this situation with the Cuban-related protests point up the problems with this law, where We literally in the Constitution have a right to petition the government for for dealing with grievances. I can't say that word today.
to redress your redress of grievances. Yes.
But so we're allowed to do that, and trying to criminalize protests because you don't like what they're protesting about, but let the protests go on that you do like, it has constitutional issues, and it's just a mess. So yeah. I think there is a point where we should look at passing laws that, you know, are constitutional. That seems like a good idea.
Jamal tweets the show, the DeSantis anti-riot bill should be overturned based on the predictable selective enforcement. We're now seeing the irony of Cubans protesting for freedom in a state that is oppressing the right of people to protest. This is richer than cafe con leche, he says. Mark in St. Augustine, go ahead, Mark, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning. I just want to say I'm in favor of if someone wants to protest, that's fine. But the minute that they step out into traffic, especially, say, on I-95 or some other place, not only are you creating a safety issue, but you're also impeding the free flow of other individuals to move about where they choose. So I have no problem with people protesting, standing on the side of the street, waving a banner, shouting whatever they want to. But the minute you get in front of me and create a safety hazard for myself, my family, the others around me, then I don't have a problem with those individuals being arrested, and whether they be Cubans or Black Lives Matter folks or whoever it is. You know, protest all you want, but there's a time and place for it.
Thanks, Mark. I think the reason this has popped up as a discussion point is because there were so many Cuban protesters in South Florida that did block traffic, but were not detained. And so that gave an opening for critics of the law to say that they're concerned it will be selectively enforced. But we'll have to continue to follow it. Okay, before we let our esteemed panel go, we're going to do a quick lightning bolt around the horn as we talk about news that might have escaped your attention this week. Yes, it is time for our lightning round, everybody. with the sound effect. I'll start with some good news. The Jack's Chamber is loving this one. U.S. News is out with its new list of the best cities to live, and Jacksonville made the top 25, coming in at number 22. The annual Best Places to Live rankings examine key factors like typical commute time to the average unemployment rate, housing affordability. So when we got some calls earlier in the show saying people don't want Jacksonville to get too big, it's because they feel it's a livable city, I guess, just the size it's at. It may be part of why we made the list. Dan Scanlon, what's on your radar?
The fact that our homicide rate right now is about 30 less than it was last year, which was a pretty nasty year. Community leaders are saying one reason is people are fed up with crime and they're sending in tips, and some people are getting off the streets and in jail.
Good news. Angela Spears.
Well, the fact that, gosh, there's so much going on, Melissa. The fact that, you know, we're seeing, to me, that's off the radar, that you're seeing people holding these job fairs because people need jobs. Some people don't want jobs, but I just think that overall that we're seeing more and more opportunities become available for people.
Good news. Tim Gibbons.
So more good news. The downtown Sweet Pete's, a favorite of I know some of your listeners, has opened a restaurant inside, and it's the type of eatery that downtown needs, and it's good to see that sort of growth.
That's great. And Sydney Bowles.
I'm watching DCPS, the school district, said it could gain as much as $14 million by paying a contractor to attract up to 2,000 students back to public schools from charter, private, and homeschooling. So interesting to see those dynamics at play in our school system.
You can look at that story at WJCT.org. Thank you, Sydney Bowles, Tim Gibbons, Dan Scanlon, and Angela Spears, for being with us. Everyone have a great weekend.
Thanks, Melissa.
Happy Friday.
In a moment, more Friday fun, the beautiful noise of Northeast Florida. It's this month's listening session in our Jacksonville Music Experience. Don't go away. It's the biggest stories affecting the Sunshine State. Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup.
Each week at noon, we interview newsmakers and people from across the state discussing the stories and issues that affect your life. What's driving the conversation in Florida?
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Every Friday at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
The president is pushing Congress to pass a new plan that would overhaul everything from early childhood education to health care to the tax code, and Republicans aren't on board.
To me, that $3.5 trillion really is the extreme Democrats' freight train to socialism.
It's the Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, connecting listeners to the beautiful noise of Northeast Florida. That's the mission of WJCT's Jacksonville Music Experience. It's our multi-platform music station here at WJCT Public Media. You can listen to it on all of our HD channels on the radio or at WJCT.org/Jack's Music. And there are other ways we'll talk about. Our own Matt Shaw has some cuts now for us, showcasing all of the best local talent that you can hear only on JME. Hey, Matt. Good morning.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you with us. You're so great at pulling music that we can get into from local talent. What's on your radar this month?
I have three new songs. There's a ton of new music up on jacksmusic.org right now. You can listen to all these songs there. But I picked three that were kind of summery, kind of in that mellow realm.
Sure.
As we're kind of moving slow in the humidity, I think these three songs fit. So I wanted to start with an artist who lives in St. Augustine. DL is okay. He makes kind of contemporary singer-songwriter stuff, bridging the generational divide between like Dire Straits up to the War on Drugs. He's got a new record called Gravy Days, which in a lot of ways reminds me of like 70s era Jimmy Buffett, which
nice.
Is a compliment in my book.
Yeah, sure.
The song Florida Motel I want to play. It's full of references to places in and around St. Augustine. And I think it's a really smart country tune. So let's hear DL is OK's Florida Motel.
There's deco pink flamingos that stand guard over my door, and a neon sign that's buzzing through the witching hour. I can hear my neighbor just polishing his barrel. A knock upon his door, soon my desk lamp starts to rattle.
That does have a Jimmy Buffett-esque kind of feel.
And I was going to say, if you've been to Trade Winds in historic St. Augustine, that song sounds like that place looks to me. So.
I love it. I love it. That kind of put me a little bit in mind of why I love it, too. Okay.
Very nice.
All right. Tell us about Teal Peel.
Yeah. Teal Peel just put out a new single 2 days ago. It's the first single from an upcoming project. It's called Smello Coffee. It's kind of a rumination on boredom and apathy. And it's got that kind of soft, loud thing that like the Pixies did in the late 80s and early 90s. It's a really nice song kind of in that alternative rock realm, but still a bit mellow. So let's listen to Smello Coffee from Teal Peel.
That should be my theme song and yours too, I think.
Well, yeah, and I know you had Thurston Moore on here a while back, so yeah. I know you're an alt-rock fan.
Yeah, yeah.
Art rock, yeah.
And you kind of think these guys harken back to the Pixies, Guided by Voices. They're from my hometown, Dayton, Ohio.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, also the Breeders.
Yep.
I love that kind of stuff. Okay, so that's Teal Peel, Smello Coffee. Let's listen to one more cut Matt wants us to check out.
Yeah.
Lainey Tripp and Jacob Cummings.
Yeah, this duo, they put an album out together. It came out actually at midnight. I think there's 8 songs on there. I want to play one called Passing Sun that had already come out as a single. It's kind of sepia-toned, sun-kissed kind of folk songs. There's lots of atmospherics in their tunes, kind of saxophone and synths and stuff, but it's like still acoustic guitar, singer-songwriter-y stuff. So let's hear Passing Sun. They play tonight at Blue Jay Listening Room in Jacks Beach. Get your Fauci ouchie so you can go.
These guys who are Florida bred but now based in LA, you say they will be at the Blue Jay tonight.
Yep.
People can
Blue
come
Jay
out and listen
room.
To them.
Yep. I think doors are at 7:00. All this music, though, you can hear on jacksmusic.org and our Fresh Squeeze playlist, which is on Spotify if you just search Jacksonville Music Experience and give it a follow.
That's right. Follow the JME, the Jacksonville Music Experience, a service of WJCT Public Media. Lots of ways to listen. You can stream it at jacksmusic.org. You can listen on the radio. You can listen through Spotify, as Matt said, through the WJCT app. Lots of ways to check out local and national cuts that you and our music director are picking just for the First Coast.
Yeah, David Luck and Summer Songs, too. Check that out.
Yeah, check it out, everyone, at jacksmusic.org. The Jacksonville Music Experience, it's a unique listen. You will find it nowhere else in this community, and we're really proud of it. Thank you so much, Matt. Matt Shaw, always great to see you.
Always great to see you, Melissa. Thanks.
And let's listen again to Lainey Tripp and Jacob Cummings, Passing Sun. They play tonight at the Blue Jay Listening Room in Jacksonville Beach. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we'll be back at noon for the Florida Roundup. Join us then. Enjoy the music, and have a good weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.